You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, British Columbia, Simon Fraser University Campus Radio, streaming on the internet at www.cjsf.ca.
Today on Wings. Seaweed farming is known to have been happening as early as the 1670s in Japan. Nowadays, it is being promoted as the most sustainable and climate-friendly form of ocean aquaculture. In the 21st century, the practice has spread from Asia to far corners of the world.
The one thing that is very clear for seaweed farming is that it's usually women that do the labor and engage in that.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
The Kibuyuni Seaweed Self-Help Group in Shimoni, Kwale County, Kenya, was established by the community in 2010. This was after 2 years of trials of seaweed farming, conducted by the Kenya Marine and Fisheries Research Institute. Diana Wanyonyi spoke to two members of the self-help group, and later to one of the scientists. She first caught up with Mwanasiti Mkuu, who was working at the shore.
Mwanasiti Mku is a seaweed farmer here.
Nimeona wenzangu wanapanda nami nikapanda. Mimi imesaidia mali pakubwa sana. Maana kile nyumba yetu ilikuwa imeanguka.
I saw my fellow women planting seaweed and I also started farming seaweed. It has helped us so much because the roof of our house had fallen. When I sold seaweed, I was able to buy iron sheet and repaired the roof. Seaweed is also food to fish and it also attracts tourists. Fish has increased in numbers, but they usually run away during monsoon winds.
The ocean wind put an end to that interview. Here's another seaweed farmer. Her name is Tima Mohamed Yusi. She talks about how the growing profits from seaweed have changed her life.
Kwa majina ni Tima Mohamed Yusi katika kijiji cha Kibuyuni. Na kijana nashughulika na kazi ya ukulima wa mwani. Ukulima huu ulianza kitambo. Tulikuwa hapa kijiji cha Kibuyuni ni kama maskini kabisa. Hatuna pesa, hatuna majumba mazuri, watoto hawasome. Lakini kwa saa hii kulikuja hiyo watafiti, kulikuwa kuna mwaka mmoja.
I am Tima Mohamed Yusi from Kibuyuni village. I am a seaweed farmer. This seaweed farming started a long time ago. Before this project came, all the people living here were all living in poverty. We didn't have money. Our houses were in bad shape, and the children didn't go to school. But now, look at us. We are living well. What brought in about this project is scientists who came here in Kibuyuni after many fish died here in the Indian Ocean, near Kisiti.
Hawa watu wa mradi wa mwani. Ulikaletwa mradi wa mwani, zinyasi zikapandwa baharini. Ulipokuja, wale watu wakafanya mabaraza, mikutano, watu wakajamii, wakahamasishwa. Watu wakafanya nasari. Hata hiyo mbegu iliyokuja awali kabisa, ifanyiwa hiyo nasari. Ile kamba yake pia nilishughulika nayo.
When the government heard about it, they sent scientists here to investigate further on why fish are dying. They later concluded that there is inadequate of seagrass that is very important to provide food for the fish. After a few weeks, the scientists concluded that there is need to plant seagrass. Government and scientists held public participation where they educated us on the importance of planting seagrass. They also listened to our concern too. We agreed and started farming in the ocean. I was among the first people to start farming seaweed on the nursery before being transplanted to the main farm in the ocean. This is a good agribusiness.
Hakuna naona hakuna kazi nyingine kama huu mwani tangu tulipopanda. Tulikuwa sisi tumaskini. Tumejenga, tumepata pesa, tukauza, tukapata pesa, tukajenga majumba. Zamani tulikuwa na nyumba za udongo, juu viungo. Lakini saa hii, tangu tupande huu mwani, biashara ya mwani tufanye, tuna nyumba za bloki, chini, juu, ni bati, hivi sasa tunalela nyumba nzuri, na wale watoto wetu ambao ile temu ya nyuma, zile siku za nyuma, hakuna umradu wa mwani, hawakupata masomo vizuri ya elimu wakasoma, wakaenda mbele.
Many farmers joined in. We planted, harvested, and later sold it. This seaweed is very important. It has helped us by uplifting our lives from poverty level to better life. We have built concrete houses from mud houses. Our children are now going to school, both primary and secondary school. Even others are in college because of seaweed farming. Now, we are expecting to add our income through value additions because when dry seaweed is ready, we process and we are able to make soaps, shower gel, body lotion. We even make cake as a seaweed product.
Kufundishwa sabuni, sahi, mwani unatoa sabuni, unatengenezwa mafuta, shower gel, tunatengeneza kila kitu, tunatengeneza keki, unatengenezwa jeli, unatengenezwa shampoo. Sahi, naona na shukuru sana. Mazingira barini, kuna wakati kama huu, wamvua, tunaona mwani wendelea vizuri.
During rainy days, seaweed that we planted grow well and faster. But during drought period, seaweed rot very fast.
Kuna siku zile za changazi, mwani ndio changazi kikianza, mwani unaoza sasa. Kama hivi sasa, hapo nyumani tu, kama mwezi uliopita, changamoto iliingia barini ya huu mwani kuoza.
Those were two members of the Kibuyuni Seaweed Self-Help Group in Shimoni, Kwale County, Kenya. Next, Diana Wanyonyi interviewed Dr. Jacqueline Uku, Senior Research Scientist at the Kenya Marine and Fisheries Institute in Mombasa. Dr. Uku listed many ways she helps work with oceans.
My name is Dr. Jacqueline Uku. I am a research scientist at the Kenya Marine and Fisheries Research Institute. I also work as the research coordinator. I wear several hats and contribute in different areas. I am currently the national coordinator for the Marine Spatial Planning Process for Kenya. And regionally, I have served for about 6 years as the president of the Western Indian Ocean Marine Science Association. And globally, I've been contributing in different fora, but I think the most significant contributions have been to UNESCO, where I was the co-chair of the editorial team that put together the Global Ocean Science Report that supported the Ocean Decade for Ocean Science. And we are currently in that decade, and we use that report as a baseline of information that we seek to use to see how we can improve on many statistics in the coming years within this ocean decade. Recently, I was elected the chair of the expert group for the African Decade Committee. And in that committee, we hope to be able to give a push to Africa to be able to engage in the decade and to benefit from the focus on the oceans. Also, recently, I became also a member of the expert group for ocean literacy under IOC UNESCO. And ocean literacy is something that is very close to my heart. When we talk about blue economy, we talk about the oceans. But there are many people who do not understand what the ocean has to offer. Children who do not understand what lies under the water. And so I'm just entering a field or in this decade wanting to contribute to exposing what exists in the ocean and its opportunities, and using all these areas that I'm engaging in to make a significant difference. Yeah.
What is the role of women scientists globally?
Women scientists have many qualities. I think women are detail-oriented, and so we bring an eye for detail. Women are very creative. We run homes. When you're running your home, you have to be extremely creative on a day-to-day basis, and we bring that creativity to our workspace. We bring inclusion. We are able to build teams, I think, in better ways and ensure there is inclusion of participants and delivery of different aspects as women. One thing I would note is that as we wrote the Global Ocean Report, we found that we are training women in science at lower levels. So we are training at bachelor's, there are women moving on to get master's, but very few are moving beyond. Very few women are in policy, especially from Africa. And so I think our desire and my desire is to make sure that women begin to move through the pipeline. We call it a leaky pipeline, where somewhere along the way they drop off, they leak off. We want to begin to look for things that can seal that pipeline so that women move into PhD, women move into taking up leadership positions. I also recognize that the training for science is very different from the training for leadership. And so I'm very interested in working with women to teach them how to lead, to help them lead, and to be able to begin to count an increasing number of women that have courage, but go beyond courage, but have skill to be able to lead in science.
On Wings, you're listening to an interview with Dr. Jacqueline Uku, Senior Research Scientist at the Kenya Marine and Fisheries Institute in Mombasa. She spoke to Wings correspondent Diana Wanyonyi. They talked about why seaweed farming was introduced on Kenya's southernmost coast.
Now, Dr. can you take us through about what pushed the seaweed farming in Kwale County? Why the need?
The engagement in seaweed farming started with science. We had researchers that looked beyond our borders in Zanzibar, where the scientific community in Zanzibar had borrowed a lot from Asian countries and brought seaweed farming to Zanzibar, and communities were benefiting. The one thing that is very clear for seaweed farming is that it's usually women that do the labor and engage in that. So our scientists borrowed a leaf and said, you know, let us experiment. Let's look for suitable areas that we can grow this seaweed. We found different places have been mapped as being suitable, but the south coast, a place called Kibuyuni, is where we selected to start. The project, after, you know, moving from scientific experimentation, moved into now upscaling of farms, because it was possible to grow the seaweed. There were markets for the seaweed. And during the project that I led, the Kenya Coastal Development Project, between 2010 and 2016, we were able to support women that were engaged in the farming to upscale their farms, to build drying racks so they're not drying the seaweed on the sand, but drying it in a way that was made it cleaner. And further on along the way, as we closed Kenya Coastal Development Project, we found the Blue Economy Committee for Kenya was interested in value addition aspects of the seaweed. And so they were able to put in a system and a machinery that helped the women dry and grind the seaweed. And today we have those women adding value in a small way by making soaps and shampoos that are being marketed. Now, my wish and my desire is that we could move this to the next scale by maybe getting a private investor that can take these efforts and make them bigger. The women will only be able to produce as much soap as their capacity can allow. But with private sector partnership, and I say partnership, so that the women get good benefits, I believe they can go further. It is, I think, for me, an indication of what science can do to uplift livelihoods. When these women started that work, they were living in thatched homes. Today, they all have an iron roof on their houses. They all have a stone structure for their homes. And many homes there boast of university-educated children, simply because the revenue from the seaweed has helped the women and families. I don't want to leave the men out. They've helped families to pay school fees, to push their children. And so the benefits, social, educational, are way beyond what we ever imagined for that community. They are women that have traveled extensively to tell their story. And you can find them on social media, you can find them on YouTube, just telling the story of how far they have come from something that was promoted through science.
On Wings, you're listening to an interview with Dr. Jacqueline Uku, senior research scientist at the Kenya Marine and Fisheries Institute in Mombasa. The institute goes by the acronym KEMFREE. Dr. Uku spoke with Wings correspondent Diana Wanyonyi. They talked about why seaweed farming was introduced on Kenya's southernmost coast.
What was the main criteria for you guys to choose Kibuyuni but not Mombasa, not Lamu?
First and foremost, it goes with the type of marine environment. It has to be shallow enough, intertidal and expansive. Covered by water at certain times of the day and maybe not fully exposed. So that was the first criteria, suitability of the site. And you find those sites all over. South Coast was easier, it was accessible. We have working stations as KEMFREE there. So access to Kibuyuni was not so difficult compared to maybe access to other places. The seaweed is expanding, but then the one thing that has made Kibuyuni succeed has been coherence in the community, good leadership. Not all community-based projects work. There has to be elements that make it work. Number one, good leadership, coherence, transparency, I believe. And so these women have been able to, yes, and accountability, these women have been able to have all that, and it has moved them, and trust. We tried the seaweed work during KCDP in other places, but you find that that energy, that push is not as strong. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it was a handful, and now I think the farms are extensive. Yeah.
What are some of the challenges these women farmers are facing?
Maybe being in the water full time, that is not easy for them. One social challenge has been maybe they're challenged by the men in the society because they're doing better. So that sometimes also brings about social discord.
Is there any correlation between seaweed farming and climate change?
There is, in that there are aspects of climate that will impact the work they do. Seaweed is affected by a disease called ice, where it bleaches. And that, I think, is impact comes through maybe temperature changes, the water level changes. We also tried to move the seaweed into deeper areas where we would anchor them on rafts. And one of the things, the strong ocean currents, which sometimes were not really anticipated, would sweep away the material. So seaweed farming in deeper rafts has not been as successful, simply because the sea either has become rougher than we thought. It's not as calm, even during the northeast monsoon, as it has been previously. When you have seaweeds and in abundance, it becomes a very tasty meal. So what happens, they attract a lot of fish to the site, because fish feed on algae, fish feed on seaweeds of different types, not necessarily the one that we have planted, but the one we have planted then becomes an easily accessible meal because it happens to be there. So definitely the minute you establish farms like that, there'll be an increase in fish, and most likely that fish can be harvested using methods that are not harmful to the setup of the farms. Women, from our observations, women traditionally would not go into a boat to fish. That was the domain of men, because men are going further offshore. So women would remain in the near shore. So that's why seaweed farming would be attractive. Putting up of ponds in the near shore is also attractive to women, because many women will not own vessels and will not also have the strength to be able to pull fishing nets out of the water. But with time, we are seeing women taking up fishing. There are many areas along the coast where we have women fishers, and they fish in two ways. They can either own a boat and hire a crew to fish for them, or physically fish for themselves. So we are seeing a lot more women are coming to the sector. I don't have all the statistics, but slowly, I think through marine frame surveys, the data is being collected by the fisheries department.
What does it mean for them to be the stigma that women cannot do such kind of job that are limited for men?
I think a lot has gone into the education of the girl child. And obviously, I think these women are a different generation. We have not looked at, I think the statistics should collect their age so that we are able to know, you know, they are not our, they will not be our mother's generation. They may be a generation that is even younger than myself, who have more courage, they are schooled, and they have been part of the social dialogue on women empowerment. So maybe they have been able to overcome the perceived barriers. Yeah. I think for us, we are at the stage where we are looking at many African countries in the region. We are looking at a blue economy as the next frontier. And with that comes a lot of the economic part. When we look at blue economy in African countries, we are looking at how do we exploit these resources for us, for our children, and we're looking at the economic aspects.
Dr. Uku also considers possible downsides of the so-called blue economy.
The problem with blue economy is that we put a term, an English term, to something we've always been doing, in my opinion. We've always been fishing. We've always been having tourists. We've always been shipping. All those are components of the economy. Why we call them blue is because they're happening on the ocean space, which is blue, and they give us an economic return. Yeah. So blue economy has always been with us. It's just the revival of the thinking has helped us package it in a way that resonates globally, but we've always been in the blue economy at the coast. And so you find that the seaweed farming falls under economic exploitation. And what we need to consider is the sustainability of the exploitation, and to make sure that we are still safeguarding our natural resource base. Because as I said, the seaweed that we are farming is introduced. It exists, but then the one that has to, that is able to grow, we brought on board to be able to give us the benefits that we are looking at. The one that grows naturally would not have done that for us. We add the word sustainable just to help us remember that we cannot put all these seaweed farms all over the coast. We need to determine the best spaces and provide for that, which is why then we come to the process that we are undertaking, which is marine spatial planning, to be able to plan for spaces in the ocean, to be able to say this area is suitable for seaweed, it's economically viable to put it there, and it's also environmentally sustainable, because by growing seaweed there will not be affecting other resources. Other globally, countries are advanced in making decisions of safeguard simply because they already have a marine spatial plan. So it's on the basis of these plans that countries are able to make decisions on how best to use their marine space. So you'll find countries that already have put safeguards. They may have determined on their coastline, because of historical uses, they are not going to advocate for a certain type of activity. Yeah. One thing I would say is that it's extremely important for us to understand the value of the space that women occupy in the oceans. We are often blind to the fact that women will harvest shells on mollusks, some for food, some for trade, to make jewelry and ornaments. We'll also be blind to the fact that we have, you know, seaweed is very obvious, but women are also what we call mama karangas. They come to the beach and collect the fish. That is already a space they occupy. If you build a hotel on that beach, where would they go to do their trade? So we need to value, and it's very clear from the space use of women for seaweed, they get more than $2 a day. It pushes them beyond the poverty line. And so it's important to understand that the use of women's spaces, of spaces in the ocean by women, give them opportunities to put money in their pockets to help their households. And it's very important that we take consideration of gender aspects as we do marine spatial planning and as we plan for ocean spaces for the blue economy.
That was Dr. Jacqueline Uku, a marine scientist at the Kenya Marine and Fisheries Institute in Mombasa. And I am Diana Wanyonyi, reporting for Wings in Kwale County on the Kenyan coast.
Wings thanks all our supporters, including your local community radio stations, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, whose works can be found on the website gifteconomy.com. That's gift-economy.com. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle Is Cast. I'm Wings series producer Frida Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.
Embark Sustainability Society is an independent, student-centered nonprofit working across SFU campuses. Embark focuses on climate and food justice in their programs and initiatives. Some of their ongoing work includes their food rescue program, learning gardens, and sustainability career nights. Discover your role in building a sustainable future based on your unique skills and interests. Learn more at embarksustainability.org and follow along on Instagram at embarksustain.